thank you for your attention. I'm Dan Gibbons from the City Club of Chicago. It is our honor on behalf of the City Club and our board of directors, our board of governors. It's an honor to have so many amazing people come and take time out of their day to join us here as we discuss so many different issues throughout the course of the year and so many different programs. I know there are a lot of familiar faces in the room, and we welcome you all back. But it's really nice to see some fresh faces and hope that you all understand what we're doing here at City Club in sharing this platform and this microphone, these microphones, and our list of civic leaders, sharing this with all of you who are doing great things in and around Chicago. And we've had a great couple of years of sort of reimagining this club, and a lot of you in this room have been part of that, and many of you are going to be part of that moving forward. So I just wanted to take a moment to say genuinely thank you for being here, thank you for sharing your ideas, your programs. I've talked with three of you today about programs that we are just created and are going to be coming out with soon. And one thing I also want to mention is a partnership that we've been discussing with the University of Illinois system, and the Sustainability Congress is going to be here in June, and we haven't made this official yet. That's kind of how we do things here at City Club, but we are going to have, I guess we'll announce now, we're going to have a series of programs on sustainability leading up to this global conference that's going to be in our incredible city in June. So there's a lot to come there. There are a lot of experts to bring in and listen and hear from, and not just listen to, but have these discussions with. And in that spirit, I also ask you to check out on your tables, you have blue pieces of paper. We do appreciate questions for this panel. So please get going on those questions. Feel free to pass them up anytime during the program. We're not too formal here. One other thing. I have a host of things. So give me a couple more minutes here. I do want to thank our sponsors, because we couldn't share this platform without these sponsors. Elevate is here and has been very instrumental in this program. Thank you, Elevate. Thank you to the Pritzker Traubert Foundation, another partner of City Club, and more to come on that front. And yet a third partner at City Club who we've had many discussions over time, Chicago Cred. Thank you not only for your partnership, but for all the good that you all are doing in the city. This is where the rubber meets the road with the folks in this room. These are people who fund projects. These are people who actually carry them out, people who vision them. We often have so many elected officials who are able to create policy that is based on what everyone is hearing here at discussions like this today. So thank you. Thank you, Jennifer Staines. Thank you, Leo Smith, Cindy Mullis from the Pritzker Traubert Foundation. You all are what make this club what it is and what it's going to be. So this club would not be what it is today without someone who's here sitting at the head table, very unusual for her because she's always behind the scenes making all this happen, and that's Amanda Agosti. Amanda is amazing. She's a partner. She's a friend. She is, because of Amanda, this club survived some of the darkest days and years in the history of this 121 year old institution. It's a Chicago institution, and it only survived because of Amanda. And Amanda has had enough after 10 years. She said, we've been working on this for a while. She has had enough. She is going to explore how she can take what she has done here and all these amazing people she has met and do even more with that. So there's so much more to come from Amanda. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but we can't wait to continue to welcome her back to the head table where as a guest. We're not always going to have flowers at the head table, but I would like to ask Amanda to come up here and accept some flowers on this, your last event after 10 years with the City Club. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Amanda, on behalf of our board.
We actually have flowers.
Oh, my goodness. Aww. Thank you. Thank you, all of you. You make City Club, and I can't wait to come back as a guest and see all the ideas that will come from today and previous programs for the next 10 years, next 120 years. So thank you all. Thank you, Dan, and the board. We love our city, and onward, Chicago. Thank you.
Oh, sorry. I could and should go on and on and on. She would be mad at me and she would get some kind of hook. But I think you all know if you've been here that Amanda is the heart and soul of this organization, and we are going to miss her on so many levels, but look forward to welcoming her back often. Thank you for indulging me there, and all those who are part of this club understand how important that is. And now I'm going to... I'm going to turn it over to Andy, Andy Biedenman. So what he's going to do is I'll introduce Andy, and then he's going to welcome our panelists and have them introduce themselves. As I said, the new faces in City Club, I don't know every one of these panelists, and I look forward to hearing so much. It would not help for me to try to introduce them and all the amazing things that they're doing. So I'm going to let them do that themselves with the help of Andy Biedenman. So Andy, who's moderating today, is a chief strategy officer for the Pritzker Traubert Foundation. He leads the foundation's workforce strategy and supports a wide range of investments focused on building economic opportunity in Chicago. So please join me in welcoming to the City Club Andy Biedenman and his fellow panelists to this stage. Welcome to City Club. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Persistence. Getting up. Thank you.
And you're welcome to, if you want to speak from here at the beginning,
I think I'll stay seated. Thank you for that introduction and welcome, Dan. And first, let me say thank you to the City Club for hosting this conversation. Thank you to all of you for being here today. Thank you for Elevate for inviting all of us to join them on stage here today, and for our incredible panelists for what I think is a really important and timely conversation about what happens next in the green economy. I always like to caveat my role in these conversations with a statement, which is that PTF is by and large not a climate funder. We care tremendously about climate issues, as anyone should, but our work here in Chicago is really focused on economic mobility and economic opportunity. And we have had the tremendous privilege to be a part of this work for the last few years, because I think, like many people in this room, we see the tremendous opportunities that this transition can afford to overlooked workers, to disadvantaged communities, to entrepreneurs that make our city great. And so, as you can imagine, the last few years, I think, have been a period of a lot of excitement for all of us as state governments, federal governments stepped up in exciting ways. We had initially planned this conversation a few months ago as an opportunity to build a big tent around all the opportunity that we saw in front of us. And as you all know, the federal election introduced, it's called, uncertainty about the work ahead. And so this conversation feels very well timed, and I'm excited to hear from our experts here on stage around what they are seeing, helping us situate this moment in a much longer arc around this work, and why there's still reason to be optimistic. And so with that, I'm just going to ask our panelists to introduce themselves, and Ms. Brenda, if you'd like to kick us off.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Brenda Palms, barber. Oh, I threw that barber in there. I've dropped the barber. Okay. Brenda Palms, and I'm the president, CEO of the North Lawndale Employment Network, and also the founder of our social enterprise and impact businesses, Sweet Beginnings, and our Be Love Cafe. And really pleased to be on the panel this afternoon.
Senyo Adore, CEO of Synergy Eco Solutions Enterprise. We're involved in workforce development and project management in the clean energy workspace. Humbled to be with you all here this afternoon.
Hello, I'm Michelle Carr. I'm the CEO of Evergreen Climate Innovations, and we're a not-for-profit that's also an investor. We invest in the very earliest stages of climate technology, particularly those that are hard to get off the ground. We call it hard tech, like energy transition or changing our processes on how we decarbonize. And we focus on the greater Midwest because there's lots of ingenuity and not as much attention as some of our coastal cities.
And I'm Ann Evans. I'm CEO of Elevate. I'm very excited to be with all these very beautiful people today. And Elevate implements clean energy and clean water programs that benefit affordable housing, nonprofits, and social service agencies, and at the same time grow a diverse workforce that gets to install those solar panels, install that the insulation and the high efficiency equipment. And we support diverse businesses who are taking advantage of this growth in the clean energy economy that we want to partner with everyone in this room to make sure that it is an inclusive growth opportunity.
Thank you. So, excuse me, I'm just going to put this here. I think your mic may not be working.
Okay.
So that should help if anyone needs it, please.
Do I need to reintroduce myself?
Would you? Yeah.
Senyo Adore, CEO of Sysenergy Eco Solutions Enterprise. We're involved in workforce development activities and project management in the clean energy space. Good to be with you.
Senyo is so impressive. I may ask you to do that a third time just so people get to know who you are. So I think a lot of the origins of this conversation and the momentum that I reference really comes down to CEJA legislation at the state level and IRA legislation at the federal level. And maybe just to kick us off, you could start us with a 101, the basics of what are these bills, what were they intended to do?
Absolutely. And I will start with the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act, or CEJA, because it came first. And we're very grateful for the leadership all across all units of government that allowed us to implement CEJA beginning in September of 2021. And CEJA focuses on phasing out carbon emissions from the energy and transportation sectors. It includes a number of programs that are implemented both by our state agencies and by our utility partners. And it includes equitable workforce, clean energy business development, increased access to solar, electric vehicle expansion, and more. Annually, this is a huge program. It puts Illinois as a leader on climate policy, and we are spending upwards of $400 million each year to advance these initiatives as part of CEJA. Now, the Inflation Reduction Act, which was enacted as a bipartisan bill in August of 2022, has very similar focuses, but it's a much more historic investment. Over $370 billion are being allocated towards similar programs focused on our energy and transportation systems. And those programs have already rolled out benefits in terms of tax credits. It's one of the most wildly popular tax credit programs that I think we've ever seen.
Thank you. I think we'll spend a lot of time today talking about what's next with these bills. But I think the other important part of this conversation is a recognition that the work for creating a just transition, the work that is accelerated by this legislation, extends back decades. And many folks in this room have been working on this work for years. I want to turn to our other panelists, Senyo, Michelle, and Brenda. Give us a little bit of context about how you found yourself working at the intersection of climate and economy, and what have these bills, particularly in the last few years, meant for the work that you all are doing. And maybe, Senyo, you can kick us off.
Why not? So, you know, I've been in the energy, I would call it supply chain, my entire life. I started out in fossil with General Electric. I was a field technician, field engineer, and, you know, that led me from the generation component into transmission and distribution. So at a point, I was building and designing substations and building and designing medium voltage and low voltage networks, both here in the U.S. and then with a little bit more context, broadly in my background, my parents are from Ghana, West Africa. So I've also been involved in programs in Africa around rural electrification. What I found was that at a certain point, we're unable to take that infrastructure because of the topography into certain areas. So the only way to actually bring access to individuals was through distributed generation, right? You can't carry poles, wires, transformers into roads that aren't well built, but you can transport solar panels, inverters, and batteries into those spaces. So out of necessity, I was brought into the clean energy space. That was happening in lockstep with a lot of the CEJA programming that was happening here in Chicago. And when COVID hit, it kind of grounded me. I was unable to do the amount of traveling that I typically did. And I had all this excitement, all this, work that I was doing, but I couldn't access it because of, the limitation in movement. So I connected with my partner at Table Six, COO at Sysenergy, and we thought about artful ways to take some of the lessons learned from my global experience and try to marry that with the intentions that came out of the programs and policies in CEJA, right? So what are we talking about here? We're talking about marginalized folks. Mm-hmm. We're talking about underrepresented folks that don't have opportunity to this value, both from an asset perspective, but then also from a capacity building perspective, right? So there's a big initiative to transfer that knowledge, right? So when we started working here in Illinois, we were a new company. So, I had to essentially dismiss my background, what I thought I knew about the industry, and get grounded in what it meant to deliver that value here in Illinois. You can't do that alone, right? As much capacity as you think you have, you need a community. You need a big brother, if you will, to kind of help usher you through the system, educate you, and let you understand how you can be effective with your talents in the space. As chance would have it, I met Tiffany and Trilandra and Ann Evans. I met Elevate Energy. They really had the pulse of what was going on in policy, understood what the vision was, and understood how to take essentially our latent talents and put them, to work in order to benefit the community at large. So, yes, I've implemented, in Africa or in Europe or in Asia, but what does that mean here in Illinois? That's a specific conversation. It's more acute. And I probably wouldn't have been able to stand our program up, without the support of Elevate Energy. So that's our story. And we want to just give credit where it's, where it's due.
That's great.
I think that's worth applause. Michelle, maybe we can turn to you next. Senyo shared his entrepreneurship journey. I know this is something that you all are thinking a lot about in Illinois and the Midwest more generally. Tell us a little bit about Evergreen's work at the climate economy intersection.
Sure. Before I get to Evergreen, I want to say that I've been on the job for a year. The previous 11 years, I spent as the Illinois director for the global environmental organization, the Nature Conservancy. And the top two priorities are tackling climate change and the twin crisis of biodiversity loss. Mm. They're interrelated. And the top strategic actions was to, among them, was besides protection, as you might imagine, protect places, it was the clean energy build-out. And the reason that the Nature Conservancy focused was because if we don't clean up the way we produce energy and really fully decarbonize the way we live, there are many other things that will suffer, including our way of life that we know. And so at Evergreen, one of the key tenets that is not a far leap from what I was doing before is that it has to work from a business perspective. And so we are investing in these very early stage climate technology companies, as I said, to just put it in your mind's eye. Imagine that ingenious invention for a battery technology that's coming out of Northwestern University or University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign out of the Granger School. Imagine Argonne Labs and what they're doing around sodium ion batteries. There are many, many things that are happening. These types of technologies are necessary. They're absolutely necessary in order to arc to the goals that we have for a low-temperature, low-carbon future, and they're super under-resourced. There's a reason we're a not-for-profit. It's because sane investors would not invest in these very long-term technologies. It's so risky. It takes a long time. It is fraught with failure, and it's because you're disrupting very incumbent, ways of doing things. Companies think years ahead, and they have big equipment and so forth, and doing something different is really, really difficult. So I'm going to give one example, and that is a hometown investment, NanoGraph. You may have heard of them. They're came out of Northwestern University. They won an award last year for creating the most energy-dense battery in the world. Wow. They have a factory now on the west side of Chicago, and they just won a DOE, Department of Energy, award in order to build a factory in Flint, Michigan, around the auto industry. And so as I think about you're talking about the IRA and that intersection, these are examples of, sort of like how it all comes together. We've got to find these commercial successes. And what Evergreen is doing is thinking about how we get those companies to commercial success through investing and supporting.
Amazing. Maybe, Renda, we can turn to you next. We've heard about Senyo's entrepreneurship work. We've heard about Michelle's work with big business and startups. You're working with people living in our city. Talk to us about what that work has been like and how you found yourself working on climate opportunities.
Yes. First of all, unlike some of you may know that we work with honeybees and help formerly incarcerated or justice-involved individuals through our social enterprise business, which was quite accidental, right? I would say that the work that we're doing, that we have the honor of doing in partnership with Elevate, was very intentional. And we found ourselves at the intersection of climate and the economy because we also know that Black and brown neighborhoods have not been as engaged in this sector to begin with. And not engaged, not because of anything other mostly than people aren't aware of what these kinds of job opportunities are and that they can have a career there. We also know that, unfortunately, many of the neighborhoods on the south and west sides have been disproportionately impacted by mass incarceration. And so when you have a criminal record, when you have that X on your back, as folks like to say, you're not, unfortunately, fully free upon your release because of the stigma associated with having a background. What makes this particular clean energy sector very important and interesting for us is that there are opportunities, there's a receptivity and openness to individuals who may have had a brush with the law, but can absolutely gain skills in a 15-week program, right? Solar panel installation training, where they might have been working at a fast food restaurant making minimum wage to earning a certification and a job that can start at $60,000 a year. It is so important that we help folks in our community in North Lawndale, where the annual income per capita for individuals is $15,638. And we're very committed to helping make sure this is a community that is more in alignment with the city of Chicago, right? How do we increase those wages and salaries? This is a sector that allows us the opportunity to do that. So we're very excited about it. We also know that communities of color are often more vulnerable to issues around climate. And that's another area that we need to spend more time educating our community with as well. So for us to be at this intersection, it's really because there are great jobs. Yep. This is a sector that is here to stay. I know some of us are a little nervous because federally things, we don't know what's going to happen there. But I think that regardless of what happens, right, that these are jobs that are here to stay. These are jobs that pay well. And importantly for me, they also offer fair chance employment.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that, Brendan. I think that's actually a really nice transition into the next question here. Obviously, things have changed in the last few weeks, and there's a lot we don't know about what's to come. But I want to open it up to you, Ann. Give us a sense of what we think might happen next. What's at risk? What's not at risk? What should we be listening for in the coming weeks and months?
Well, thank you for that question.
Maybe.
No, okay. We got to face it. Right. And so we're using the term uncertainty here. We are managing through uncertainty. We've managed through it before. We, of course, don't know exactly what will happen. We do know there's going to be leadership change at key departments like the Department of Energy, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and many, many others that are largely responsible for implementing the Inflation Reduction Act. Mm-hmm. Now, more than 80% of the Inflation Reduction Act funding has already been committed. I don't think anybody can really say what will happen in the future. I will say I've never seen and being through election cycles in the past, I've never seen congressionally authorized dollars that have been awarded and paid out. I've never seen that money clawed back. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I do think that there will be, and there already is talk of trying to address that addition, that bit of the Inflation Reduction Act that has not yet been encumbered. So that could be at risk. And the other big thing we know is that there will be a tax bill. Mm. There will be a tax bill. The tax credits in the Inflation Reduction Act I mentioned earlier are wildly popular. They've had huge impacts already in Illinois. I talked with a woman who we've worked with who had her home upgraded, including going fully electric and getting solar panels. Part of that happened because her contractor got to get one of the tax credits that's part of the Inflation Reduction Act. Michelle mentioned how these grant programs, rebate programs, and tax credit programs are already having real impact on the ground. I expect some of it will continue and some of it will get pulled back. But I also just want to refocus us a bit. Energy policy has always been at the state and local level. Mm-hmm. Yes, the federal government can impact federal climate and energy policy, but it's always really been at the state level. I'm taking a little breath and sigh of relief that that I live in the state of Illinois.
Yeah.
That has great leadership.
Yeah.
on climate and equity. So I think we will continue to see this. And then I just also want to even step back from just thinking from a federal policy lens or a state policy lens and say, there is a huge clean energy transition happening already. And it has been happening for decades, and it's going to continue. And it is made up of corporate leaders, leaders from higher education, nonprofit leaders, business leaders, investors, really all sectors of the economy. And so that is going to continue. And I think it's up to us to make sure that it does continue.
I think that's right. Round of applause. And I'll say in our planning calls for this conversation, I think particularly after the election, when personally I was feeling a little bit like the sky was falling, I think my sense in talking to all of the leaders here on the stage was the work very much continues, and in many ways there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic. And so perhaps we can go there, and Brenda, if you wouldn't mind starting us. I mean, you remain very bullish on the workforce opportunities in this space for the community that you're working in. Talk a little bit more about that and what makes you optimistic in this moment.
I am optimistic. I think that, first of all, being a CEJA grantee has, in this partnership that we have with Elevate, has helped to transform. And I know we use that word a lot, but it is transforming the capacity of individuals to have an improved quality of life, first. And then second, it's having that impact on our community, on our neighborhood overall. But what I like most is that this investment that we're making, it's opening minds of employers, and it's opening the doors of job seekers that we serve who want to work and earn a livable wage, but who never thought that that was possible for them. And I think that it's allowing a new conversation to happen about what's possible in this particular sector. I also am optimistic because we know that there's going to be incredible growth regardless, I think, of what's going to happen. There's I think 52% increase, in solar panel jobs, and energy is not going to go away. And so I am very encouraged. I also know that unions are challenging for many of the folks that we work with, and there's a increased receptivity around enrollment and participation in unions. And those protections are very important. And those wage protections are also really important. And so I'm encouraged. The other thing I'll share is when you have partnerships like Elevate, they help you realize what is possible. So the North Lawndale Employment Network, located, of course, in a wonderful neighborhood in North Lawndale, yes. Unfortunately, known for more of the ills of poverty than the amazing and powerful and dedicated work that happens in this neighborhood. I'm so proud of what is happening in our community. But now y'all made me lose my train of thought because I got excited about North Carolina. It is really in the partnerships that we're engaging in now that have really changed what that future looks like. So working with Elevate, for example, they came to our campus, and we're excited. We have a new 20,000 square foot campus. We took the old Community Bank of North Lawndale and transformed that into a workforce development campus. Beautiful. Thank you. It is. We loved having you guys there. But what had happened was, they came to visit and tried to assess, hey, can we do the solar panel training in your space? And, you know, they looked, we walked the floor, and I'm like, uh-oh, this, you know, I'm there you are. It wasn't working out, y'all. Let me just say, it wasn't an easy fit, in part because you need roofs. You know, you need a roof, and we have like flat roofs. There's just no, how are we going to do this? We need X number of square feet. But I will tell you that after careful thought, we did think out of the box, and we came up with these mini roofs that we could put in our Peace Garden, this little space that we have that's outside, so they could still experience all the elements of what you'll need to experience while you're in training. And we came up with a solution. So here we have these mini roofs, and people are doing all this electrical work, and it's raining on certain days, and it's beautiful on other days. And we really gave them a real world experience because we have shared values and saw the opportunity to make this partnership work. I'm telling you that we put 15, y'all? 15 men and women through this cohort, this training. All of them, I think everybody completed the training. that they earned incredible certifications that are respected, not just here in the state of Illinois, but national certifications that will open opportunities for them for the rest of their lives. That's what is positive to me about the future, that we have great minds and values and leadership. We all came together. And the day that we had the graduation, I'm sure you have to admit, there are a few tears in the room.
Oh, yes.
There are a few tears in the room. So we know it won't be easy, but what do we say about things that are easy? You know, it is those things that are hard that we work for that ultimately in the end are worth everything. They're worth it because we are changing families. We're supporting families. We're improving the economic situations of neighborhoods. North Lawndale is not unique in that way. This is the opportunity for the entire city to raise. And I wish I could come up with really cool solar panel energy analogy, but I can't yet. But nonetheless, it's well, here it is. I got one. It's going to be a brighter day.
There it is. Speaking of brighter days, Senyo, you've built a very successful business.
Yeah.
Brighter days ahead. What makes you optimistic about this next chapter?
Yeah, humbly, you know, we sit at the intersection, I guess, between climate and economy, right? Mm-hmm. And if I could take some liberty with that and turn that intersection into like a roundabout or, you know, a four-lane highway, if you will, if you add access and equity to that, you start to like mine in areas that are generally overlooked, right? So we talked a little bit about risk, you know, before, and just, you know, the kind of folks that come through our workforce development program are deemed risky mm-hmm. for one reason or the other. Mm-hmm. And us kind of taking that bold step, right, as the city of Chicago, it's a competitive environment to work in, obviously, right? But once you have a common, I don't like to say foe, but a common challenge to kind of rally around. You know, I think the strategy is to lock arms, right? And we forge forward together. So just an example of the benefit of the Elevate and NLEN collaboration afforded us the opportunity to train 15 individuals, of which we retained two or three for ourselves. We hired out
That's
of
right.
that program,
That's
right?
right?
So I think that's the spirit that we forge forward with as we kind of look at, you know, what is the forecast, you know, in our space. I'm still very excited about what's coming out of, you know, the R&D space and kind of the new technologies that are forging forward. I spend a lot of time, because I do contracting work, in factories, mm-hmm. right? And trying to understand from an OEM perspective, hey, contractor A, what does the new tariffs and all of that look like for you having to roll out a job? And I can tell you, a lot of the solar manufacturers and a lot of battery manufacturers have already had this on their forecast. They have been pivoting towards developing technology, developing capacity in country to make sure that we're not encumbered by the big bad wolf, essentially, that's to come, right? So again, like being on the ground, mm-hmm. grassroots, and having all these touch points are just continuing to fill me with encouragement, because everywhere I turn, I see folks untying knots, right? And it may not mm-hmm. all happen at once. We may not pull one single thread and it all comes mm-hmm. apart, but mm-hmm. I'm confident the more conversations I have that there are mechanisms in place that will allow this economy, this industry to stand. So that's where I see things.
Thank you. Michelle, same. Let's give him a round of applause for Senator for that. Same question for you. I think there's a sense in a lot of this conversation that there's a Chicago moment here. There's an Illinois moment here. There's a Midwest moment here. Evergreen is obviously focused a lot on our region's leadership in this space. What's the data telling you? What's got you optimistic about the entrepreneurship dimension of this work?
Thanks. And I'm left wanting to riff on what you're doing because there are so many intersections. So in preparation today, just getting ready for what I would say, I did a little Googling of what the fastest growing jobs are in the U.S. And it took me immediately to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And number one is, I'm hearing it a little bit, it is wind turbine technician. Oh. Number two, solar tech. This is nationwide. And so, you know, as we think of, Anne, what you've, you know, spoken through some of these uncertainties with administration change, I think of the analogy of, you know, when we're driving a car and you have your foot on the, EV pedal, and when you take it off, it's, you know, you do stop accelerating, but you don't stop. So there is momentum that is here. It's here. And I want to share that 60% of our founders in our portfolio are either women or people of color. And it's not because we target specifically. We do have a DEI prize fund that is separate. It is because we open the process and we look to where the ideas are being created. And these people are diverse, and it's coming from our communities that were lesser represented in that venture capital startup community. It's inspiring. I'll say from a statistical standpoint, we create a report with an organization called E2. E2 is a national, nonpartisan group. And their job is to just simply collect the data to say what's happening with clean jobs build out. And if you honed into the Midwest, you would find jobs are growing four times faster in the clean energy, you know, clean economy build out. In Illinois, we are fifth in the nation, Michigan sixth. I am very optimistic that when you look at where the momentum is, that it is behind the future that we want.
Absolutely. Thank you. So Amanda is giving me, is glaring at me. And so I think we'll do a lightning round, and then we'll save some room for questions if there's any from the audience. And please do write them down if you have questions for our panelists. Here's the lightning round question. We've got this incredible group of collaborators and partners and friends here assembled. I think we are all committed to keeping this work going forward and keeping our foot on the EV pedal as much as we can. What do you need from the folks in this room? Where do folks over the next 6 to 12 months, 18 months need to lean in? What do we need to be talking about? What do we need to be doing together? And I'll ask you just to do a quick 30 seconds each on what you need from this group here. And Anne, you want to start us off?
Yeah, I need your ideas and collaboration. So please call me. Let's work together.
I'd like you to look up that Clean Jobs Midwest report. It's easy to find. And tell your legislated your representatives about how important it is to keep this economic momentum, even if you're not for climate change. You should be for ingenuity and for progress.
I'll get right to it. Funding. Right. Yeah. So I mean, I think it's important. You know, I work from, you know, the financial viability of a job backwards. And I think in order for us to sustain those that are talented in those areas, can look at the gaps in the projects and fill in there. Otherwise, amplifying stories. We need more of these narratives out there. So those two things, funding and stories.
That's good.
I would say that it's important that we continue to amplify the message around equity and opportunity in the green sectors, the clean energy sectors, and that folks that are of color and women aren't just participating in the green economy, that we're leading it. And I think that with time, that's what should be happening, right? So that's what I would recommend, that we will also be able to reduce the challenges around labor shortages if we continue to open our minds and our investments around investing in people who have traditionally been left out or kept out of these kinds of opportunities.
Let's give our panelists a round of applause. do we have time for a few questions? Great. We really sort of two buckets of questions for you all. Let's start with one from Jonathan Snyder with North Branch Works. Thank you for the work you all have been doing. You've shared stories of federal and state programs. What work has the city of Chicago been doing on the climate economy?
I can start. The city of Chicago has been advancing its climate action plan. And several years ago, through municipal bonds, made a big investment in climate initiatives, including Chicago Green Homes, which will upgrade and electrify thousands of homes across the city. The city also, with its own power purchasing power, has invested in the nation's largest utility scale solar initiative in the nation that's located a couple hours south of us in Sangamon County. So that's just a couple of ideas, but there's much more.
Others to add there? We also received a couple of questions about the workforce dimension of this, both in terms of how can a current workforce development programs better adjust to prepare folks for the climate economy, and then what do those providers need to successfully transition those trainees into employment? I know, Brenda, this is something you've thought a lot about. I see AJ is in the room here, is also thinking a lot about this. Would welcome perspectives on how can the workforce training ecosystem be stepping up to this moment?
No, I think that you all probably have some great experience around actually being in the classroom. But I think that from our perspective, it's really important that we help people understand what these jobs are. There's a real disconnect between what kind of job is that? I'm going to be outside. Does climate matter? You know, there's just a real lack of general information about what the opportunities are for this sector. So there has to be investment in education and helping us develop really good marketing and educational materials so that people are able, because we will tell you, and then they come in and it's just an unknown. It's honestly just it's not something folks grew up hearing about. And so we do have to spend more time up front just helping to educate people on the type of job opportunities there are. What's good is that they do see that there are wage opportunity. You know, there's real livable family supporting wages that these jobs offer. So there's curiosity.
Yes.
And that's positive. And then once we can get you in, then you have amazing individuals and professionals that can help them adjust to what that learning is. I think that's where we would have to start. There's just a gap around, it's a new sector. People aren't that familiar with it in neighborhoods.
I could add to that. I think you nailed it on the head, is giving them an understanding of what those jobs entail. And, you know, what our charge is at Sys Energy is not just taking them through the training, but, you know, giving them diverse applications for the technology, right? So solar and battery storage can show up in agricultural applications, but it can also show up in telecom applications. It can show up, you know, in marine applications. So to the extent that we, you know, were able as project managers to then develop these projects and use the training as a platform to expose, that really ties the context together for the students and further encourages them to stick with the industry.
Thank you for that. Our last question here, which I can take an attempt at, and I think it's actually a nice place to end, was around how do we use this moment and sustain the energy of this moment in ways that also create agency for marginalized communities. And my sense is that coming out of this conversation, there's a real opportunity for us all collectively to continue to do this, the important storytelling around what this could mean and the work that it'll take collectively to get there. And so I think there's more to come, and looking forward to bringing this conversation back to this group as often as we can. Please join me in giving our panelists another round of applause.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming. We are having a holiday reception on Monday the 16th. It's on our website. We've got a couple tickets left, so if you're interested in some holiday merriment, we'd love to have you. Thank you to all the so many things. My brain is turning, so I'll give all those notes to Dan for next steps, next panels. We hope to see you all again in 2025. And have a happy holiday and new year, and thank you, everyone. Thank you. All right.